Hello, everybody. Again, welcome to the Regional Integration California Greenhouse Gas Compliance Stakeholder Call. Where we're at, we have a short agenda for us today. We are planned to go till noon. Don't anticipate needing that much time, but we do have it available for you in case you have questions, and we will be taking Q&A throughout the presentation today. Tom Trethewey is going to be taking us through the review of the issue paper. Where we're at in the stakeholder process is the issue paper phase, and so we are here, as you can see. And at this time, I will turn the call over to Don Trethewey. Don?
Good morning, everybody. So moving to slide four. Currently, the ISO is ISO basically assumes that the ISO is California. So when we look at implementing the cap and trade program for California, we do it at a balancing authority area level. As you move to a multi-state balancing authority area, you'll need to have a sort of a change in paradigm that you need to look at various state programs within that multi-state balancing authority area, and then how do you implement those various programs consistent with what each state requirements are. So we'll first talk about the California Cap and Trade Program. Basically, according to ARB rules, if there's any supply serving California load, does have a compliance obligation. So generators inside California have a cap and trade obligation, as well as those who import to California to serve California load. Since the cost of compliance is the same for all supply, they are able to just reflect those compliance costs within their energy bids, and they are then likewise compensated through the payments, energy payments, of load and exports. And the same approach is implemented in the day-ahead and the real-time market. So any supply supporting the ISO simply embeds the cost of complying with the cap-and-trade program within their energy bids. And we, in essence, dispatch the market just like we do with any other cost associated with the generator in coming up with the least cost dispatch. Moving to slide five, when we expanded the ISO's real-time market to other balancing authority areas in the West, we did recognize that we needed to come up with a mechanism in the energy imbalance market to only subject the ISO to the California cap and trade program and not impact the other balancing authority areas in the EIM. So energy that is generated and consumed outside of the ISO doesn't have any GHG cost compliance in it. So in order for us to implement that approach, the generation, or the supply outside of the ISO balancing authority area, now actually bids a separate greenhouse gas compliance cost bid. That's because that cost only needs to be recovered in the event that that resource is serving ISO load. So the way that it's currently implemented in the energy imbalance market is the external resources, on an hourly basis, they submit a single megawatt quantity and price, and that is used to determine if that resource is going to be supporting the transfer to the ISO. It should be noted that this quantity and the price is independent of the actual energy bid range. And what that means is the entire output of the resource is eligible to be identified as or attributed as serving the transfer to the ISO. In addition, the scheduling coordinator can opt out of ever being considered for delivery to California by simply bidding a zero megawatt quantity. We put this measure in place in response to our original EIM filing, where FERC had us within 1 year to modify our design such that the resources have the opportunity to opt out, as well as we move to a cost-based approach for the price that they can bid. And we do the price-based, to make it cost-based, we calculate a daily maximum price that the resources can bid up to. Where in the previous design, there was no ability to opt out, and the resource simply could bid a GHG cost, with the only restriction being that the total energy bid plus the greenhouse gas bid was less than the $1,000 bid cap. Moving to slide six, and I'll get through these next two slides and then I'll stop for questions. As many of you may be aware, we are working with the California Air Resources Board to address some leakage concerns. Given that the EIM's least cost dispatch may not reflect the full atmospheric effects of a dispatch. That's because the least cost dispatch can have the effect of sending lower emitting resources to the ISO while not accounting for a secondary dispatch, and I should have put that in quotation since all of this is done simultaneously, but there is a backfill effect that can occur where an emitting resource is incremented and not attributed as serving the ISO's incremental load. Lastly, you could also need to look at it from the export side, is that the least cost dispatch and the EIM in general allows the ISO balancing authority area to avoid curtailment of renewables, which then requires an emitting resource outside of the ISO to reduce its output, which benefits the atmosphere as well. So moving to slide seven, we are currently working, again, with ARB in ARB's current stakeholder process to address the current EIM design. And once we've got a solution to address the EIM concerns around leakage, we need to then assess whether that solution is scalable or at a minimum consistent with what we need to implement in the day ahead for a multi-state balancing authority area. And with that, I'll open it up for any questions.
And we do have two callers in queue. And as a reminder, folks, to ask a question or make a comment, you can hit #2 on your phone to enter the queue. And if your comment or question gets covered, you can always exit the queue by hitting #2 a second time. And if we could go to the first caller, which is Meredith Youngheim with the California Public Utility Commission.
Hi, this is Meredith Youngheim from the CPUC. Just a quick request, since you're bringing up this ARB stakeholder process, would you be willing to provide a link or some information on the CAISO stakeholder page for those of us that might not be familiar with that process and or know how to find information about it on ARB's website? Thank you.
Sure. I would also note that we did put a link within our paper as well, so but we can look at putting a separate link on our page as well.
Could you tell me where in the paper? Sorry, I must have missed it.
It's in one of the footnotes.
Oh, okay. All right. That's probably why. Thank you.
And that footnote is footnote 8 on page 9.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. If we can go to the next caller, which is Kevin Woodruff.
Hi, Kevin Woodruff here, consultant for TURN. I'll note the footnote in the paper links to a presentation from a June 24th workshop. There's actually getting to the, you know, one page back from that. There's a separate link, but you might want to provide as well. But
okay.
But that I'm on the same subject. You have a fairly ambitious schedule laid out in this. Presentation of having a proposal, a straw proposal in a month. How tied is your straw proposal to the resolution of the CARB process, their stakeholder process? Because I see some potential.
So I think
delinking there.
Go ahead. Okay. So I think from a CARB standpoint, it's really a discussion around leakage and that secondary dispatch effect. I think for moving forward with the regional design, we need to address ways to, for instance, move away from the paradigm that the California ISO is California, So we need to have some way to track flows or transfers on a state-based level. So how we would implement that paradigm change, I think that's independent of the leakage. I think also recognizing that under a multi-state balancing authority area that imports and exports, where now they're currently considered within the ISO as all from California or to California, with the exception of some wheels, I think we need to also come up with mechanisms to recognize that the intertie scheduling points change in a multi-state balancing authority area and what ways we need to consider those and rules we need to have around that to accurately account for transfers between the various states. And then after that, I think, you know, you'd want to have a consistent approach to addressing the leakage concerns that have been identified in the EIM.
So you're kind of saying that that particular issue with EIM was on its own track, and you're looking at a broader issue, you know, a multi-state balancing authority, and you'll need to address sort of the quote in quotes leakage concerns as part of that if in a multi-state balancing authority. Is that
correct.
A fair summary? Excuse me.
Yes, that's a fair summary.
Okay, thank you.
If we could go to the next caller, which is Pushkar Wagle.
This is Pushkar Wagle from Clean RCA. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, so at the bottom of page 5, when you talk about the ISO will calculate the daily maximum bid price allowed, presumably you're referring to the GHG price itself, GHG cost itself, right, not the overall energy plus GHG cost.
So in this context, I am referring only to the GHG bid.
Okay.
But I would note that for any participating resource outside of the ISO, in the EIM, we do calculate additional costs when determining the default energy bid.
I got you. And would you be describing how that at part of this presentation or somewhere else, or you can direct me to where how you know you end up using the GHG emission rate that's authorized by CARB to calculate the specific resource related daily maximum GHG cost?
You can that's available in the EIM business practice manual. You can also look in terms of policy development. It was part of the EIM year one enhancements phase two.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay.
And if we can go to the next caller, which is Colby Kettler. And Colby, if you could remind us which company you're with.
Good morning. This is Colby Kettler with VTOL. Hey, Don, a quick question for you. I know this is a large undertaking, and I appreciate you guys taking this on. just want to clarify and kind of understand a couple of points that I think might ultimately be discussion points for a longer-term solution with respect to EIM and just physical physical imports, exports of California, the state of California, as you mentioned, the paradigm shift from, you know, CalISO, California boundaries and things of that nature. But EIM energy typically is not tagged, correct?
Not at a resource-specific level. We do tag the transfers between the balancing authority areas for energy accounting purposes consistent with WECC.
So are those tags going to be reflective of the final net interchange between those balancing authorities?
That's correct.
So one of my thoughts are in this process, which might actually really allow all of the quote-unquote playing fields to be at the same level or all on the same playing field, would be as to if EIM is going to look at a net interchange for a carbon obligation, that imports and exports of electricity on an hour-ahead basis or day-ahead basis have that same application as it relates to net interchange versus schedules of electricity. Right now, as we all know, ARB is looking at schedules of electricity, which does not account for simultaneous exports or how you're looking at it. And therefore, therefore, when looking at the whole numbers, one could argue that carbon is actually being being placed on or obligated to electricity that is never entered and or used into the state of California. So I was really hoping with this this new stakeholder process, this would be something that you guys would be interested in discussing and possibly resolving so that all interchange is essentially on the same playing field along with internal generation, which internal generation, as we know, is has an obligation based on actual production, actual generation, metered generation. Imports and exports right now would be the only one that is actually based on a schedule versus actual.
So, yeah, we are working closely with ARB, and we will be working closely with ARB on any multi-state approach. I think what you're highlighting is one of the issues that we talked about with regards to how you treat imports and exports in a multi-state balancing authority area, given you can't make an assumption about which state within that multi-state balancing authority area that's serving. And the energy imbalance market did make an approach to where we were able to attribute it to a given participating resource. And there is some, you're going to have some similar mechanism to do that attribution. The question then becomes, how do you treat imports and exports for that purpose of attribution, which is the second issue that we highlighted in the issue paper.
So this will be, obviously this will be something that's covered with you guys and something that's on your, in your mind is something that needs to be resolved.
I think that we want to make sure that what we design is consistent with the reporting obligations and accounting of ARB, recognizing that the current approach where you simply say an import is serving to the ISO balance authority area is serving California, that we can't make that same simplifying assumption under a multi-state balancing authority area.
Okay, I completely understand and agree with you. My guess, I would go one level deeper to say that, and I'm hoping maybe that you guys could be a sounding board for the rest of the market because you have the information available at your disposal, but that if we treat imports differently than how we treat EIM and we treat internal generation, which let's just take internal generation and imports and exports right now, just by themselves, right now imports of electricity is treated differently than internal generation because they do not take into account the simultaneous exports of electricity, or they do not take into account net interchange between balancing authorities. So I completely agree with you, and I completely understand when we talk about multi-state balancing authorities and so forth, but there's an underlying issue as well in the sense that we're using schedules of electricity versus actual electricity for one accounting measure for the purposes of obligation. And I'm really hoping that California ISO with EIM will use that as an educational tool back to ARB and look for an opportunity to enhance this accounting for real obligation to all market participants, because essentially importers of electricity will continue to have an obligation where they might not have an obligation because their electricity essentially never gets there, whereas EIM and internal generation would not. So I really hope that you guys actually use this to maybe better facilitate the entire, all three areas, internal generation, imports and exports, as well as EIM, so that everybody's on the same playing field and everybody has the same obligation based on the same actual megawatt generation.
Thanks.
All right, and if we can go to the next caller. And caller, if you could state your name and the company that you represent.
Hi, my name is Ayat Osman. I work with the California Public Utilities Commission, Office of Ratepayers Advocates. I have one comment and question regarding the current regulations under CARB. allows electric utilities who import electricity from renewable resources to California to claim renewable RPS adjustment, which renewable portfolio standard adjustment, for the electricity that doesn't get directly delivered to California. I'm not really clear on how going forward this RPS adjustment will be treated. Currently, this RPS adjustment allows for reduction in GHG compliance obligations, and it saves ratepayers money, because otherwise ratepayers will end up double paying for electricity that they need to meet the RPS goals as well as the GHG compliance. If RPS adjustment go away, we'll end up with a double payment going forward. So I'm interested to learn more about how this will be treated under the AIM strategy or market, and if you're discussing this issue with CARB. Thank you.
Hi, this is Andrew Ulmer with the ISO's legal group, and it's an issue that we know is a live issue in a current rulemaking process before the California Air Resources Board, and they're looking at changes to their regulation that relates to the RPS adjustment. It's not really within the scope of this initiative, but we'd be more than happy to point you in the right direction in terms of what's being addressed in the CARB rulemaking process, and maybe even give you a contact name there. And maybe the best thing to do is to send Tom Kusha an email, and then we'll follow up with you offline.
Thank you.
And just for your ease of reaching me, my email address is tcucia@caiso.com. And we have one more caller in queue. If we can go to Anya.
Yes, hi. This is Anna Garza Butes with SDG&E. I have more of a comment regarding the semantics on some of your slides. So, for example, on slide 5, you talk about You talk about energy generated outside of the ISO, but really for cap and trade, it's energy generated in or out of California. So we're looking at the state line as the delineation, the boundary. So I know it's just a small point, but it's an important point that because the CAISO, the ISO boundary extends beyond the state of California. So if you could maybe consider making that change on your slides going forward.
Okay, we'll take that under consideration. Thanks.
Sure.
And we have no other callers in queue?
No, we don't.
Okay.
All right, let's move to slide 8. So now we're getting into the sort of the two areas of two issues that we have to look at as part of the regional solution. The first is, and it's a good segue from the previous call, is currently the current methodology assumes that the ISO boundary and the California boundary are the same. And that, going forward, you can't make that simplifying assumption given that you're a multi-state balancing authority. So, we already talked about this at the very beginning in terms of how this is actually done, but again, generators and importers, those people providing the suppliers to California will have a GHG obligation, and the suppliers to non-California regions in the multi-state balance authority area won't. And so let's move to slide 9. So, under a multi-state balancing authority area, you're going to have to be able to differentiate California load from other internal load to that balancing authority area. such that the generation and imports that are serving California load have an obligation and have that cost reflected in the energy prices in that that in California zones, and for states outside of California that the cost of that is not included. That's because the generation of those imports that are serving the non-California load won't have an obligation under California's cap and trade program. But as we'll talk about in the subsequent slides, you know, we have looked ahead, and there may be instances where individual states have their own clean power plan program that has a need for us to track flows into or out of that state region. Next, we can model the individual generators and load nodes by state. So we can identify where they are geographically located and put them in a given state. We do run into issues around the imports and the exports, given that they may or may not be delivered to or from a specific state. And I've got some pictures upcoming that'll illustrate that. Lastly, there may be some additional rules that we need to consider in order to accurately model the transfers between the states in this new multi-state balancing authority area. And this is not an exhaustive list. We do look forward to your comments on this to help identify some other areas that we need to look into in terms of the multi-state design. But a couple that we talked about internally was that, you know, load aggregation points can't necessarily cross state boundaries. We want each state to reflect its own carbon costs accurately. Next is around self-scheduled generation. So this is generation that's basically must take. They are a price taker. So if I'm self-scheduling in California, can that generator really serve load in Nevada, for example? Or if I self-schedule a resource in Oregon, can that really be assumed to be supporting California load? So I think we're going to need some rules around that. And I think we already got pretty good direction from FERC on the EIM design that we do want the ability for generators to opt out of supporting a given state program if they wish, given the sort of the voluntary nature of supplying another state's energy needs. And I'm sure we'll through this process we'll identify some additional issues that we'll need to address as well. So with that, I'll pause and take any questions on why we need to now change the paradigm from California ISO's balancing authority area is California to it's not.
All right, and as a reminder, folks, to get into the queue, you can hit #2 on your phone. If your comment or question gets covered, you can hit #2 a second time to exit the queue. And we do have some callers in queue at this time. Let's go to Eric Little.
Hi, this is Alejo. I'm in the FERC's office. I just have a clarification question on slide page 9. So when you say the imports, is that the imports are going to be imported into the multi-state BA and the expanded ISO footprint, or you're thinking about the actually energy flow between the states and the multi-state BA? Because I wasn't clear when I read the slide.
So when I use the term imports and exports on this slide, that is in reference to the multi-state balancing authority area interfacing with other balancing authority areas in the West.
Oh, okay. All right, thank you.
And our next caller is Travis Ritchie. And Travis, if you could let us know who you're with.
Hi, this is Travis Ritchie with the Sierra Club. I think this might be later in the presentation, so if you want to table this point until then, that's fine. I think the point you mentioned earlier in the introduction about leakage, I would want to say, you know, for this issue of whether it is kind of deemed delivered into California or not, I think we also want to carefully look at if secondary dispatch is happening outside and leakage is happening outside, how the compliance costs are applied in such a way that it actually sends a price signal to those generators and rather than doing kind of an aggregate netting out, which I think is some of the things that have been mentioned on kind of as a response to secondary dispatch in the EIM, if you net out on an aggregate, which, I mean, it's a good thing, but it doesn't send the proper signal to the individual resources and how they're responding, which is part of what the cap and trade is trying to do, which I think you mentioned well. You know, folks, generators within California, for example, incorporate those compliance costs into their bids, and therefore that's a price signal that is sent to the generator that serves to reduce carbon emissions, which is the point of cap and trade. So I would just, as we're thinking about leakage in the outside of California, how do we make sure that those price signals are being sent both to the importers that are directly importing into the state boundaries, and then also the secondary dispatch that may be occurring outside?
No, I think you've articulated the complexity with actually trying to capture the secondary dispatch effects while maintaining a very direct incentive to individual resources, especially those clean emission resources outside of California.
So this is Brad Cooper. Just to clarify your comment, are you saying that we should be sending a price signal to the resources that are not being imported into California?
There should be the compliance obligation for generation that occurs due to California imports, I think under state law needs to be considered. And I think it's more of a direct response of saying the idea of netting out based on exports doesn't capture what the compliance obligation is attempting to show. Sorry, that may have just made my point more confusing.
Yeah, I guess we're still confused about what the resources are. You're saying that our market should be sending a price signal to, whether it's the resources that we're deeming as the source of imports into California or the resources that get dispatched as part of what we've called the secondary dispatch effect.
Right. Well, to address leakage, you would have to address the secondary dispatch effect and either eliminate it from happening somehow, or if it continues to happen, you know, assess some sort of price signal on that. So I don't know that I know what the answer is right now, but I think that in order to address leakage, you have to address that point. You either have to stop the leakage from happening or assess a cost on it.
Okay. Thanks.
If we can go to the next caller, Rebecca Shelton. And Rebecca, if you could let us know who you're with.
Hi, this is Rebecca Shelton with the law firm of Thompson Coburn on behalf of the Six Cities. I have a question on slide 10, the second bullet, which states that self-scheduled generation in one state cannot support load in another state. It sounds as though this is not currently a rule, but something the ISO is considering.
That is accurate.
Wondering if you could explain in more detail why this is something that would be needed in an expanded multi-state BAA.
Well, because you're going to have to, you can't move away from assuming that the import to California is part of the balancing authority area. You'll need to have a mechanism to attribute what load is being served by what generation. And self-scheduling isn't an economic decision that the market optimization can make. In essence, it takes it because it's willing to be generating at any price. And when you make that assumption, you could theoretically have an issue where, let's say, Oregon's total load was 5,000 megawatts and they self-scheduled 6,000 megawatts of generation. That 1,000 megawatts would go to California, but there wouldn't be, how would you then get the appropriate GHG cost associated with that self-scheduled resource since they're a price taker on both the GHG cost and the energy cost?
Okay, I think
that helps.
And did you have any further comments?
No, I did not. Sorry, it cut me off. Told me it was on, I was on mute again for a minute there. No, I don't think so. I'll have to kind of think that over, and we can include something in our comments if necessary.
Thank you.
And we go to the next caller, Ellen Wolf.
Hi, it's Ellen Wolf from Azero Consulting. I had a similar, well, I don't know if it's a, I should say a similar reaction, but a question about that self-schedule generation presumption. It seems like it doesn't quite fit the situation. It seems like even a load-serving entity could have a generator in a different state that it wants to get to its own load. And so presuming that the generator stays in the state that it was generated just because it was self-scheduled isn't real intuitive to me. I think sometimes self-scheduling happens because of constraints on the generating force, but not necessarily because a generator and a load are co-located. I'm just kind of struggling with the same thing that Rebecca asked about.
So again, I think we need to recognize that the way that the market attributes which resource is external is serving California load, is it recognized that there's a discrete incremental GHG cost that needs to be considered. And self-scheduling can, you know, have issues with how you would then treat that GHG bid price. But I absolutely recognize what your point that a load-serving entity in California could contract with a resource in another party, and we would need to have an ability to pair those two up so that we know that that resource's power is one of the resource is almost like an internal resource to California. I think those are the type of issues we're trying to get at with this comment, this potential additional rule.
Yeah, so I guess let me just tell you what I think I'm hearing, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that you just right now see a constraint in how self-scheduled resources are treated in the economic dispatch, and we'll have to work around that somehow. That's what I'm hearing at this point.
Correct.
Are you saying more than that?
No, I think we just recognize that self-scheduling, if everyone economically bid, we wouldn't have an issue around this. But we know that that's not a viable option. And so we just need to have rules around self-schedules, whether it's another way you could do it is you could self-schedule, but you always have to bid as being willing to be deemed to California. But then someone might have concerns that may exacerbate leakage because any self-scheduled clean resource, you know, economically would be identified for going to California unless it opted out. So again, I think what we're highlighting here is that, you know, in the issue paper phase, that this is an area where we are looking for stakeholder feedback in terms of what issues they see with addressing this.
And I had another question on something you have on page 9, that imports and exports may or may not be delivered to or from a specific state. And I don't know if you expanded on that, but if you could talk a little bit more about that, I'd appreciate it.
I have a picture coming up where we can show that.
Okay, I'll hold my question then. Thank you.
Thanks, Ellen. And if we could go to guest 14, and guest 14, if you could identify yourself and the company that you represent.
Hey, this is Tony Braun for CMUA. Am I guest 14?
Yes, you are.
Thank you, Tom. I think the discussion with Ellen helped me understand where this issue's at with respect to self-scheduling. I would note and highlight for the ISO that there's a lot of self-scheduled imports, and I think we're going to be scrutinizing closely any proposed rules that would change that to accommodate the expansion. It seems like the expansion, I mean, that's a tried and true market functionality, and it seems like the expansion ought to be able to accommodate it.
So, I mean, I agree. We did not, as I said earlier, I expect that with this, multi-state would remove any ability for resources to self-schedule either imports or internal generation. I think there's just additional rules or considerations, as we highlighted here in this issue paper, that we need to address so that we can have maintain that existing functionality and have it consistent with what we're trying to do from a GHG reporting and accounting standpoint. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. All right, we have no other callers in queue, so we'll move forward.
Okay, so now we're sort of talking about the import and export issue, and again, I'm using import and export from this new multi-state balancing authority area with other balancing authority areas within the West. There is no sort of import or export internal to the multi-state balancing authority area. So, and that's because we don't schedule, we don't tag any schedules within the multi-state balancing authority area. Those now just become any transmission path or transmission constraint within the given multi-state balancing authority area. So we don't tag, for instance, between PG&E and Southern California Edison and the current ISO. The import to this multi-state balancing authority area, they can serve the entire IT load across the entire balancing authority area, as well as exports from that multi-state balancing authority area, use generation of the entire balancing authority area. So we need to have a mechanism to determine which generation and imports support various loads and exports. And that this presumption that an E-tag import is a way to determine which state that generation, external generation is supporting no longer is going to apply. Given that, we need to come up with an attribution approach similar to the energy imbalance market, where it is the market optimization that identifies which generators and which imports are serving load in the California zone, which is only the California zone is subjected to the California cap and trade program. So moving to slide 12. The next couple of slides, I'm just trying to orient people to the pictures and because we'll do comparisons side by side upcoming. But what I've got here is I'm making a very simplifying assumption that each balancing authority area is a state. I'm also, I've got one balancing authority area, B, that actually has a GHG program or a cap and trade program. So they're reflecting carbon costs within their energy bids of resources in that balancing authority area, as well as imports to that balancing authority area from BAAs A, D, and C. I then have these black lines, which recognizes an intertie scheduling point that reflects that greenhouse gas cost in those energy bids. And then I have red interties that don't reflect the GHG cost. That's because, in this example, balancing authority area A, D, and C do not have a GHG program. And then last, I'll also introduce the opportunity to where you could actually have an alternate GHG program, which I would then shade in a purple color. So moving to slide 13, you can see that when you combine the balancing authority areas, you can have an intertie disappear. You can see now interties change from red to green, recognizing that now under this multi-state balancing authority area that we need to determine that some of those imports will be serving D load and some will be serving B load. So it's changed the way we need to consider the greenhouse gas costs on the boundary points of the new balancing authority area. And to address Ellen Wolf's question, in this example, you can see that there's still a black line between balancing authority areas B and C. So you could argue that those didn't change. You know, that's when I made the comment that you may or may not need to change the way that those imports consider their greenhouse gas because they currently already include GHG costs in them. Okay? So now let's start doing before and afters. So in this example, we basically combined one balancing authority area, B, with another balancing authority area, D, that doesn't have a GHG program and doesn't have a program after becoming a multi-state balancing authority area. So you can see I've highlighted number one. So number one, we previously tagged imports and exports between B and D. We will no longer be tagging those imports and exports. So that intertie scheduling point is no longer a relevant point in the market model. Number two, you can see that D introduces two additional scheduling points to balancing authority areas outside of the multi-state balancing authority area. So those have now changed from red to green because we need to potentially reflect that there could be instances where imports at that point are serving load in B that has a GHG program. Then there's option issue number three. So number three, previously there was an import from D that wheeled through B to serve C's balancing authority area, C's load. Now you can't make that determination under a multi-state balancing authority area. So because we're not tagging any transfers from D to B, there would only be a single intertie scheduling point at either the black bars, black interties to C, or the red interties to other tie between B and C. You have a similar issue where now that, or let me go back to that import to D, you would still want to make sure that that import does not have a compliance obligation because it's serving D load. Likewise, you could have an export from C to D where it doesn't have a compliance obligation, but if it was previously using the intertie scheduling point between C and B, it didn't reflect the fact that it had a compliance obligation because it wheeled through balancing authority area B. Okay? So now let's go and put in a different flavor. Let's assume that balancing authority area C introduces its own clean power plan. So now you'll need to recognize that there's certain GHG costs associated with complying with balancing authority area C program. And once you combine that within the multi-state balancing authority area, you in essence have three programs that we need to have the market optimization model and reflect in the prices for each of those zones. So, you know, you would have balancing authority area B, C has a program, B and C have a program, and D doesn't. And likewise, you've now pushed the boundary position even more to other balancing authority areas in the West in balancing authority area C. And then the next slide, I'll make the last point on this, which is now let's assume that A also joins the multi-state balancing authority area, but it doesn't have a greenhouse gas program. So now you've basically got three zones within this multi-state balancing authority area. One zone subject to the GHG program for area B, state B. You've got another program for state C that zone is responsible for. And you can merge A and D together because they both have no program. But likewise, you could have, for instance, two states accept to basically join forces on their CPP plan, and they could become a single zone for that program. So after those slides, I will stop and see if there's any questions on this.
All right, folks, to ask a question, hit pound two. And I noticed that we did get one that was written that was sent out to all presenters. If that person could, please enter the queue by hitting pound two on your phone. And I don't see anyone entering the queue. Actually, Travis Ritchie has raised his hand.
All
Hi, thanks. Travis Ritchie with Sierra Club. First of all, thanks. I think this illustrates the problem very well. I guess my next question is, does the next slide have the answer, or is that what this process is?
My slide 17?
I'm just wondering, so I think you've articulated the issue well of how it becomes difficult to account for greenhouse gases once these interties are basically merged and go away. Is the next slide the answer, or are we working on that over the next several weeks and months?
With that, I'll jump to slide 17 and make my point on slide 17. We already introduced that you could, for states that have similar programs, you could combine them into various regions within the multi-state balancing authority area. If those are tradable and can be in the same program, that one helps us out because each time that we have to address a state-specific program, while technically feasible, it's another component in the prices just additional complexity. You could see at a high level three or maybe four approaches, assuming that the Clean Power Plan was successful and everybody supported it, at individual states came up with their various programs. But you could have an economy-wide, mass-based program, such as what California has, and hopefully you could have tradable instruments between those entities, similar to if Quebec joined the multi-state balancing authority, we include provinces and states together. So you could put those in a single zone. You may have someone who adapts basically a mass-based program. Hopefully those states that have adapted that approach could work together to have a similar compliance obligation and ways to not have duplicative compliance rules. And then lastly, you could have a rate-based program, and you could put all the rate-based states together. So at worst case, it's every single state has its own program and its own component of the LMP. Best case, you could, have a price of carbon that is consistently trade and approach to that that's consistent across the entire footprint. Sort of addresses your leakage issues pretty straightforwardly. But again, we're supporting the given state priorities and the state programs that they're developing around carbon and making sure that our market accurately reflects that in the cost as well as the cost of the generation and import serving that given state to the best we can.
All right, Travis, did you have any further comments?
Yes, is my line still open? Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
So I think you answered my question. So I think the result is, assuming every state has a different treatment of carbon, the kind of most complex scenario, so I think the answer I heard was that you would then add a new component to each LMP, and then that, based on where that LMP was located, would then send that compliance signal.
Correct.
And so, whereas today each LMP doesn't have that, each LMP has the same price. Is that correct?
No, that's not accurate. And under the energy imbalance market, we are able to differentiate by having that separate greenhouse gas compliance cost as a separate bid element. That's how you're able to determine that attribution and to send that price signal.
Okay, so it's not accurate today, but the result is still that you would add that greenhouse gas component to each LMP based on where that LMP was located.
So the way to think, under the current EIM approach, so it's let's say the cost of carbon, because there's an import into California, EIM transfer into California is $5, then the GHG component in the LMP of the ISO is zero because, again, they have to have a compliance obligation. But in the LMP of resources and load outside of the ISO, it's a negative $5 component of the LMP, which, again, takes that cost of carbon out of the prices that they're paid and pay.
Okay. Thank you.
If we could go to the next caller, Kevin Cito. And Kevin, if you could let us know what company you're with.
Hi, this is Kevin Cito from Southern California Edison. Had a question just due to my lack of catching up on the reading, I suppose. But what's the timeline for multi-state BAA, I guess, formation to enter both the real-time market and day-ahead market algorithm, or, I mean, optimizations from CAISO?
Well, the EIM design is up and running and has been since 2014. This we would, we haven't determined an implementation date. Again, we are trying to identify the issues associated with changes that we'd need to make in the event that we became a multi-state balancing authority area. So I wouldn't anticipate an implementation point until after we expanded our footprint from today. And so we're looking at, again, resolving the policy and market design related items by the end of the year. That's not a determination that we would implement it at any given time.
Great, thank you.
And if we could go to the line of Claire. And Claire, you are in queue.
Hi there, this is Claire Bragnich with the Western Power Trading Forum. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I just have a general comment in thinking through this and then thinking in particular about all the complexity that can arise if other states implement programs to deal with carbon under the Clean Power Plan. And the thought I had is that I think going forward, we're going to have to be very careful in thinking through what are the incentives that can and will be established outside of the regional ISO, outside of the tariff and the rules of the ISO, as well as the dispatch algorithm, versus what needs to be solved within the algorithm itself. And part of my thinking on this is that we need to split this both into the load component and the generator component. And to the extent that the Clean Power Plan results in different states implementing different programs, it results in different prices on generation, that can be solved by providing more flexibility for those generators to capture those costs. On the flip side, to the extent that states have state programs create additional demand for low emission power, either on their utilities or because they adopt a rate-based program that, for instance, would only allow crediting for power that is actually consumed in the state, then that is also an area where the states themselves may be creating incentives for ensuring that power serves load in those states. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that has to be reflected in rules for attribution of load within the ISO. That, again, market participants, if given the right tools to respond to those incentives, may be able through their bid structure and that essentially react to and help the states complying with the requirements without the need to add more complexity into the regional ISO design.
No, I appreciate that comment. I think our approach here is to the extent possible, and that's why you never get it perfect, but to the extent possible, we want to allow the market prices to reflect the various state carbon programs. But, you know, I guess at one point you could have, like I said, you could have everybody doing something different themselves. That's going to be a very complex and weird incentive mechanism, whereas if everybody traded carbon in a single market, then we would just put it all in the energy bids and there'd be no leakage from anybody. So we're sort of in the middle ground on that, and I think there, as shown here on slide 17, I think there are ways that we can avoid the dire straits of going to every single state having a program.
Claire, did you have any further comments?
No, that was it. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And if we could go to the line of Ellen Wolf.
Ellen?
Hi, it's Ellen again with Rosero Consulting. It seemed like, Don, in your paper you raised the issue of whether you have a flow-based solution kind of like you have with EIM now or more of a contract path kind of solution. And it seems like some of the questions you've raised today are more along the lines of a, you know, traditional contract path model. whether, for example, a generator in one state would be linked to load in that state or what. Do you have more to share about that, your choice right now, which way you're thinking, if you're leaning one way or the other?
I think what you're highlighting is that when it's a single balancing of, let me start with the contract path. I'm assuming that there's still contract path rules exists when there's a multi-state balancing authority area when interfacing with other balancing authority areas in the West. And I think what you're highlighting is that when it now becomes a single balancing authority area, we're not looking at any contract path between it with internal to that new balancing authority area. We're simply looking at flow-based. So I think what you're highlighting is that currently the ISO, we had imports and exports to the ISO, were soon to be California, which meant we could enforce a contract path approach limits as well as flow-based limits, and we were good. When you move to a multi-state, anything internal to multi-state balancing authority area, anything internal to that balancing authority area is going to be solely flow-based, and the new boundary of that balancing authority area would still be contract path and flow-based, but flow-based to the broader footprint, unless there's some mechanisms to, in essence, sub-allocate that to some zone within that balancing authority area.
Okay, that's helpful. Right now with the EIM, so I guess sort of in the EIM model, you would think of the footprint inclusive of the EIM areas as being a broader footprint, that within it you try to do more of a flow-based approach.
Right, and still managing, remember the EIM... The EIM transfer limits on a contract path basis.
Right, but with the sort of the allocation of carbon, you're looking for carbon at more of a flow model, it seems like, honoring the contract
path.
No.
We're looking at the total transfers, and that any generation outside of California can support that total transfer into the ISO.
Okay, and then
which gets to go ahead, Ellen. Sorry.
Circling back to Colby's question, which I'll interpret and maybe I'll not get it right exactly, but the question that's still left in my mind is whether even at the interfaces with the external BAAs, whether you could implement more of a flow-based accounting method rather than the contract path one that seems to, in a way, overcount the carbon that comes in or the energy that comes in for the purposes of serving California load.
I think you get to it's an attribution approach, not purely a flow approach. So that gets down to the rules, which is a nice segue to slide 18, where there are bidding rules that you're going to want to come up with associated with those imports, you know, and whether they can serve, if they're deemed to serve a specific state, how would we reflect that? You're hitting also on my second main bullet here is that can you really attribute a given import to a specific state? It's serving the entire EIM footprint, but does that rule need to apply to everything? You know, that we currently have some intertides that already are in the cap and trade program, would you need to take all of those out of it? You may or may not. Go ahead, Ellen.
I think my question, which I think all these items you put on the slide are interesting also, but my question maybe pertains to the issue of whether you look at gross imports or more of a net import on an interface.
Fair enough. I mean, I think that's something we need to look at and determine, consistent with the various state programs, how we treat those. That is an added complexity that we need to work through.
Okay. Thank you.
I'd add that we need to do that in conjunction with ARB. A lot of what we're discussing has to do with ARB rules and not solely ISO rules. So, you know, we're going to have to coordinate with ARB to come up with answers to questions like that.
Good. Thank you.
Thanks, Ellen. If we could go to the next caller, which is Eric Little.
Hey, Don. Hope you're doing well. Quick question. Well, two questions for you. You've got a note on here that each variant may result in new component to LMP. What are you envisioning that component representing?
The cost of GHG compliance with a given state program.
Okay. And then the second question that I have for you is we already know we've seen situations in which the day-ahead market has cleared very, very late, and we've seen situations in which the real-time market has zero marginal losses, which my understanding is that means we've gone to a DC solution because the AC wouldn't solve. With the added level of complexity that we're talking about here, is there a point in time where we need to have a start having a discussion about whether or not the additional data and the additional difficulty that the solution is going to have to go through, whether or not we're actually going to get market solutions?
This is George Angelidis. We will address this when we get to that point. We always do evaluation, make sure that the market solution is not compromised, either in performance or in quality, as we add enhancements and we expand the model.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Aaron. And I am doing well. Thank you.
All right. There are no other callers in queue at this time.
All right.
All right. Oh, actually, Jan Strack just entered the queue.
Hi. Hi, there. I just want to make two comments. And
okay.
One, I think it follows up on my colleague's earlier comment, Anna. And I guess this is sort of more of a presentation comment, but I think this, what we're dealing with here already exists. We already have load within the CalISO Balancing Authority that's outside the state of California. We already have generation within the CalISO Balancing Authority area that's outside the state of California. And we have both renewables and we have both carbon-emitting generation in these areas. So I think I think we need to start thinking about this. This is a problem we have with the existing ISO market system. It isn't because we're expanding the ISO. Anyway, that's just a general comment.
The other thing
I was thinking about on the self-scheduling, which, as other people have pointed out, could become quite an issue because we have such a high level of self-schedules into the ISO right now. It just seems to me like, as with the energy bid, where we have a default, effectively it's a default bid, which says we're willing to take any price, which is whatever the ISO's bottom, whatever the floor bid price is, which I don't even know what that number is anymore. But what I guess makes me think is that wouldn't we apply a similar logic to the GHG component, where there's essentially a default GHG bid that goes along with the self-schedule, so that if you really don't want to put a price in, then you're subject to whatever the consequences are on the other end of that. Anyway, just a concept. I haven't thought through any details, but just put that out there.
So that's exactly the purpose of the issue papers, to try to get these out so that we can consider as many of those items as possible when we develop the straw proposal.
All right, thanks, Jan. If we could go to the next caller, Kevin Woodruff with Turn.
Hi, Kevin Woodruff here. A couple of topics, one of which goes back to the discussion about the complexity and the feasibility of the market solving. And, in the issue paper, page 10, footnote 12, sort of there's this last phrase that the number of components in the locational market marginal price have the potential to become unmanageable, which suggests that you do have some vision of this sort of level of complexity becoming unworkable at some point. Is that a fair concern you have?
Yeah, and I wrote that footnote, my intent of using the term unmanageable wasn't entirely associated with the ISO being unmanageable for the ISO. It may be unmanageable for individual stakeholders, for transparency and understanding by price or why my compliance obligation is to one state and not another state. So it's the entire community. It's not ISO specific.
I appreciate that. That's an important clarification there. The other topic I want to talk about, and I'm not sure if this is like the right time or not, but the slide up there talks about attributing imports to a specific state. You have a method now that you referenced for attributing imports in the EIM using tags back on page 11. You don't need to go there. And we're talking about doing something like that similarly, and that's also mentioned in the issue paper. Do you have some idea of how you would do that? And also, would that be limited strictly to imports into like just the state of California, or would that be kind of like a balancing authority-wide kind of attribution?
So, no, I think what you would do is you'd say, I'm importing to the multi-state balancing authority area,
right.
And if I am, and if in order for me to be attributed as serving load in California, you need to pay me an extra $5. Because I will now have a compliance obligation that I need to then, under the California Cap and Trade Program. And so the market optimization with them would say, well, we can take this import, attribute it to California, and we'll collect the extra $5 from load internal to California, which then can compensate the resource for its compliance obligation that it's now incurred.
Okay. So the attribution is based strictly on GHG bids? I mean, you're doing it just for GHG compliance only? I mean, that's a question, but
It's really the combination of everything in terms of the energy bid, the GHG bid, the resource attributes, the operational characteristics. I mean, it's all of the market constraints are enforced and considered, with the greenhouse gas attribution being an additional constraint that in the event that there are transfers outside of California into the California zone, we need to reflect that there's an incremental cost.
Okay. So it's not, okay. I think you'll have to think about that some more. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Kevin. And we do have another caller in queue. And if you could let us know what company you're with. Caller, you may be on mute.
Sorry, I was on mute. This is Ayat Osman from the CPUC, Office of Ratepayers Advocates. I guess I'm a bit fuzzy. If you're going to add a GHG bid adder, for imports and exports from California in this multi-zone state paradigm, would the optimal solution always going to be renewable resources coming into California and exports of renewable resources, and the other states will end up with the non-renewable resources, coal-based or gas-based?
Again,
generation?
We're minimizing the total overall cost across that entire multi-state balancing authority area. So we consider all costs with serving California load, all costs associated with serving non-California load, as well as and determine the optimal solution across all of the supply resources, which includes imports and generators, and come to a single solution that is optimal across the entire footprint.
Is there a place where we can look at this in more detail, like what this equation would look like or the proposal look like?
So we haven't developed the proposal yet. But if you wanted to get up to speed in terms of an attribution approach, I would recommend looking in the energy imbalance market business practice manual. We did have to address a similar issue in the real-time market for the EIM.
Okay. Um, Yeah, I thank you for that. I will look up this, but then it would be more if we can discuss this in next time in more detail, how serving load in California would look in the different scenarios that you have described in the earlier graphics.
Oh, yeah, no, we can, you know, again, I anticipate in the straw proposal we'll have an understanding of how we will model the various zones and how that will be reflected in the market optimization determining clearing prices.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ayat. And if we could go to the next caller, which is guest 14, and I believe it is Tony Braun.
Thanks, Tom. It's Tony. Don, help me. And obviously, it sounds like I feel comforted that a lot of the thinking in this is in the formative stages. Help me work through a scenario which would be important to CMUA members, and that it relates to their ownership or ownership-like interest in out-of-state power, self-scheduled to serve their load, where they have been allocated allowances that they directly retire to meet their emissions obligations. So there is no monetization of the carbon costs within the dispatch, and yet these concepts of default prices or other default components that would make up the stack of the LNP or get introduced here, but I don't think that that fits with the commercial reality of a generator running to serve a load in California. The generator is running due to a whole host of contractual or other obligations that it runs.
Yep. So I think to do that, we should look at two scenarios. Let's look at a generator that is not in that's out of state, but is not part of the new multi-state balancing authority area. I don't anticipate that you would see any change necessary there. If you move now to the scenario where that out-of-state generator now is part of the multi-state balancing authority area, I think it becomes a little more straightforward. You just need to have some ability to attribute that new internal generator, although it's in another state, is serving California load. So I think it gets back to what I think Ellen's talked about as well, is what are those sort of rules that you want around the self-schedule so that we can make that accurate determination.
Yeah, Tony, this is Brad Cooper. Just so we can understand your point, I'm hearing your point that under our market design, our proposed market design or potential proposal, if we did it similar to the EIM, you would get paid for the cost of greenhouse gas compliance. And so is your issue that you don't need money because you're allocated the allowances directly? You need a way to, you know, we'd be paying you when you already have the allowances, and you need a way to just get a report of how many allowances you need to turn in or something. Was that your point?
Well, windfalls are always good, but I think at this point we're just trying to get the rules right. And so we don't want to create additional obligations. And when I hear concepts of monetization of carbon for something that there really isn't a direct link between the allowance allocation and the clearing price for carbon, I just start thinking things are going to go sideways.
Okay. No, and please document that in your comments. That would be very helpful.
Okay, thank you, Tony. Now, if we could go to the next caller, Eric Little.
Hi, again, this is Eric from Eric's office from SCE. Hey, I just have a quick question on the attribution approach you were discussing. So it's not clear to me whether the attribution approach, if you need to know how much portion of a generation in one state serving the California load, and collectively, how do you track the energy flow between the states within the multi-state BAA?
So would you be using the same approach, like a deemed flow as I am? If yes, how do you determine the limit kind of for the contact or pass type of concept?
So again, I don't think we're viewing and internally that there is any contract path-based approach. There is flow-based approach for scheduling all generation across the entire footprint, and then a mechanism by which we attribute to resources outside of California when load in California is greater than the generation that's geographically located within California.
You would do figure out how much of the portion of each individual resources out of state serving California after that or within optimization?
Within the optimization.
Okay, so I assume you will have more details on that later on.
When we get to the straw proposal phase. But George wants to make a comment as well.
It will be okay. Based on the EIM model that we're using now for real time. It's a similar approach. But instead of having a control area based, you'll have regional. It will be regionally based. So you have the California region and the non-California region within the multi-state balancing authority area. And you have the same approach that we're using for EIM today.
This is Eric real quick. I think what might be helpful then is if it's the same approach as EIM today would be for the ISO to give a demonstration of how the EIM is working today. Perhaps it's just taking one of these examples that you've already put together and outlining how energy would flow, how the market clears, and who gets deemed to have done what. I think would be helpful for people to be on the same page.
Fair enough. I would note that you could go back and look at some of the old EIM materials. We went into quite a bit of detail on that.
We have a lot of examples in that. I think that's exactly what you're asking for.
Yeah. If it already exists, that's fine. Perhaps just a link to those documents.
Yeah. No problem.
Thank you.
All right. And there are no other callers in queue. And so to wrap this up, we are asking that stakeholders, we're asking that stakeholders submit their comments to the initiative comments at kaiso.com by September 20th, and we will post those within 48 hours of the due date. And so we'll go one last time and see if there's any other callers that have questions or comments pertaining to today's discussion. If not, we will conclude the call. And no other calls are getting in queue, so this will be a wrap. Thank you very much, everyone. We appreciate your participation. Look forward to seeing you at the Stakeholder Symposium on Wednesday and Thursday. And if those of you who are not able to attend, you should be aware now that we are streaming some of the events, and so you should be able to participate by logging in. And those instructions were sent out on a market notice earlier today. So take care, everyone, and we look forward to seeing you at the symposium. Have a good day. This concludes the call.